Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Larkin, Judge Harris, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you. Let's all be seated. All right, good morning. Our first case this morning is Trimble versus Dalvin Cook. It's Consolidated Appeals 824-0403 and 824-0834. As appellants are aware, they will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and appellant will have 5 minutes rebuttal. For those of you out watching this live streaming, there will be an audio recording of this case available tomorrow online. But we do request that anyone who is watching this does not make their own private copies. That would violate our rules. So, counsel for the appellant, whenever you are ready, just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level. The podium goes up and down, and begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Morris. I'm a lawyer at Pastor Remley, and it's our privilege to represent the Eklund & Blandell Law Firm, as well as two of their attorneys, Dan Craig and Anne St. Thomas. With me in the courtroom today, front row to my right are two attorneys from Eklund & Blandell and St. Amant, who's also a named defendant in a related matter arising from Hennepin County and Vince Ruger. So I thank them for attending. We are here on a little bit unusual procedural posture, of course. My clients were not parties in this underlying litigation. They were counsel for plaintiffs. And we're here asked that this court reverse the Dakota County District Court's sanctioned order in that case called Trimble versus Cook. The order faulted Ms. Trimble's lawyers at Eklund & Blandell for filing publicly in the conventional manner of memorandum of law opposing Dalvin Cook's motion in limine, who he was the defendant in that case, seeking to exclude certain communications
from trial, and also sought to disqualify two lawyers in the entire law firm. So,
could you tell us what the parameters were of the order that was entered in by the district court in that decision, in terms of what was allowed to be talked about publicly?
The initial motion was to exclude two letters. Okay, I don't know if you're asking about the protective order.
I am.
Okay, the protective order is in the record. Brought a copy.
And while you're getting that, I mean, my question is, would the protective order have arguably covered the documents or the response of pleadings they filed?
So I say no. I say nowhere in this protective order.
Practices if You say no. Could a reasonable person say yes?
Well, Judge Cork, the district court judge, found that it did not, that the protective order did not apply to the letters.
Okay.
I don't think a reasonable...
No, I'm not talking about the letters. I'm talking about their pleading, the documents that they filed that you say are covered by litigation privilege.
They filed a memorandum of law asserting legal arguments as to why these two letters should be admissible. The letters themselves were not publicly filed.
Okay.
They were filed by the defendant in that case, Dalvin Cook, right? So the memorandum of law made some art, talked about the letters, what was in them, and said these letters were an attempt to suborn perjury because the letter didn't just say, we'll offer you some money for a release. It said...
And my question is, if there was any confusion on their part as to what they could or could not have said in the memorandum of law, would a better practice have been to discuss the matter or get sort of pre-authorization from the district court?
For sure, they could not have filed their memorandum as confidential without pre-authorization.
Okay.
But I don't know what we now know in hindsight, right, that Judge Cork decided, well, let's not talk about this publicly. Why? Because this is because the media is interested. That was kind of the reasoning. I don't think there's any, the protective order is not all that much different than a normal protective order, right? Protective orders say, hey, if you are in discovery and you have confidential material, you ought to label each page of the production confidential, or in deposition, you say, I announce this answer and question are confidential, then it's designated, right? That would allow, and as long as a protective order says when that happens, you can file as confidential, then that's fine. I have never understood in my career that a letter that I sent to opposing counsel was going to be, you know, between us talking about the case is something that's covered by a protective order, okay? The letters at issue in this case did, in fact, have the common, you know, heading, you know, Solomon Communication Confidential. That was not stamped on each page of the communications, unlike you would with a document production. And again, the judge who issued the order from which we were appealing decided that the protective order did not cover those letters.
Counsel, could I ask,
yes,
if I understand the protective order correctly, it allowed either party to designate something as non-public, and then if someone disagreed with that designation, the issue could be raised with the court. And I should be more precise. It allowed a party to designate something it filed as protected under the order, which then could be disputed if the other side did not want to abide by that designation.
Well, the protective order talked about when you're producing things in discovery, you could designate it as confidential. And then if the other side designated their production as confidential, you should take care to ensure that it's not disclosed publicly. I'm just looking at the order.
I tend to agree with you. I've read the protective order. I don't see that what happened here technically violates the terms of that order. But what I'm wondering is if the district court felt that it violated the spirit of the parties' agreement regarding what would be private, and if there were disagreements about what would be private or protected, they would be brought to the court's attention.
I didn't take that reading out of Judge Cork's order. Clearly, the special master, his decision, he was very unhappy with a lot of things, right? And so he wants
to get that.
He wants to impose sanctions, and he said you violated the protective order. Number two, I think he had in mind as a sanction, I'm going to take away your litigation privilege. That's a sanction, and you're disqualified. You know, you're out. It's like the manager arguing with the umpire in the Major League Baseball. You're out. That's what I took from the special master's order.
In terms of the special master's findings and recommendations and then the district court's resulting order, as it pertains to the litigation privilege and the statement that it did not apply here, that decision was made in the context of the sanctions request.
Correct.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand this. The litigation privilege was raised by your client as a response to the sanction, saying, well, you shouldn't sanction us, this was privileged.
No.
Okay. How and why did that come up in the case that's before us?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. A lot of head-scratching things happen in this case, in the related case. So at the time this case is going on, this Dakota County case, I'm not involved in the case. I'm representing Eklund and Blando in this other case in Hennepin County for defamation, a pre-existing defamation from other events. Mr. Cook's lawyers are eager to get a sanction because they win that motion in limine. They won. The judge said, I'm not going to let this be talked about at trial. So they then go to the special master and say, we want you to monetary sanction. We want you to DQ these people. And three, we want you to proclaim that litigation privilege does not apply to that memorandum of law. That's what they ask for of the special master.
does not apply to the memorandum of law in the lawsuit
in the Dakota,
in which your clients were not parties in Dakota County.
Right. That their filing of that lawsuit is not subject to litigation privilege, such that you can go ahead, if you guys would like to add that claim to your existing Hennepin County case defamation claim, be my guest. That's how I read the special master's order. And they took them up on that, right? They took the Mr. Cook took the special master up on that invitation.
Who raised the litigation privilege?
Dalvin Cook.
Okay.
Now, you know, in the Hennepin County case that's been going on for 3 years, that was raised as a defense long ago to the existing defamation claims. And to be sure, I've now raised it front and center in that case.
And what was Mr. Cook's position as to why that was relevant in the Dakota County case?
I don't think he thought it was. I think he wanted to use it in the Hennepin County case.
Well, I get that, but I'm trying to figure out if there was any basis for the special master or the district court judge to be determining whether or not there was a litigation privilege in the Dakota County case when, as I understand it, your clients weren't even parties to that case. The only reason they were there arguing these things was about
right.
sanctions.
I agree with you, Your Honor. It's rather bizarre. It's almost like asking you, could I get an advisory opinion on what I should be able to do to this opposing party in a different case? It's very irregular and I think improper, and this panel could just say, and the other weird thing is Judge Cork, when she reviews the appeal from that sanctions order, right, she generally affirms the order, she analyzes the disqualification, she analyzes the sanction part, should this have been filed privately or publicly, she does not analyze the litigation privilege, okay? So what did she mean to do? Did she mean to affirm that part? Did she think it was not relevant? I don't know, but I wanted to make the point, I guess you're getting it, but why as lawyers from Bassford and Rumley and Anthony Osland here today arguing about a $20,000 sanctions order in a DQ in a case that's now settled? It's because that is the centerpiece now of this Hennepin County case. The judge in Hennepin County, when I ask, please dismiss this case based on litigation privilege, in part defers to the special master's decision that's before you now from the Dakota County. Says, well, judges in Dakota County said it looked like that they didn't think litigation privilege applies, so I'm not going to apply it myself. So this case, it wasn't covered in the briefs because things are still happening in that case, but the judge in Hennepin County in July denied the motion to dismiss.
Okay, this. Is any of this in the record you've submitted to us about the Hennepin County case?
Oh, a lot. I've asked you to take, both sides have asked you to take judicial notice of the Hennepin County file. We've cited all the docket entries in the Hennepin County file. I've now filed an appeal under a brand new statute. Another great thing about this case is a brand new statute called Uniform Public Expression Protection Act that allows immediate appeal. So I have appealed from the Hennepin County court's most recent order, deferring to Judge the Dakota County Court on this litigation privilege. He denied that. I appealed it last month. On Friday, I will be filing a brief in this court on all those issues. And we've had some other arguments from the Cook side saying, hey, it's like kind of like res judicata, Judge Hennepin County, maybe the next appellate court panel that hears that. You can't rule differently because Judge Connolly in the panel affirmed this strange Dakota County order. Mm-hmm. So that is why, that is a big reason why we are here, and I just want to make sure that...
Well, I'm sure the other reason you're here is because of the reputation of your
absolutely.
Clients, which has been defamed.
Absolutely.
But, just so we're clear, there's a written order from the Hennepin County judge that we can find that shows why this is so important, because now it seems like res judicata is applying the Hennepin County case.
Right.
It's a written order, not an oral order.
It's a written order. It's in a Court of Appeals record.
We'll find it. We'll find it. I just want to make sure.
I don't know if Your Honors saw. We actually filed a motion to consolidate that appeal with this one, I don't know, a few weeks ago, a month ago, and that was
denied. Well, rather than get to the
denied.
Rest of that, why don't you continue with your argument? We have been grilling you for a bit.
Thank you. A couple, I don't have much time.
You'll have the time until I say stop, so go.
Okay. Privilege, sanctions and privilege, I say are, you can't have both right at the same time. If pleadings, arguments to a court, violations of protective orders can be sanctioned, but that doesn't mean you sue, you double dip and also sue the opposing party for defamation in a separate case under common law. It's one or the other, okay? I think if litigation privilege doesn't apply to a memorandum of law opposing a motion in limine, making good, rational arguments that I would agree with today, I don't know when it would apply. This is the classic case for litigation privilege. It relates to that case entirely, okay? So moving on just briefly in terms of what about the sanctions? We've talked a little bit about the protective order. Judge Cork said the protective order didn't apply. Judge Cork says, well, everybody knows that you never mention a settlement number in a brief, okay, or in court publicly. Okay, does everyone know? First of all, that's not found in any rule that's under the court rules. It says when you file under seal. We do have a Rule 408. Maybe she was thinking of Rule 408. That is not a reason to file things under seal, and it's not an absolute rule anyway. There are times when a settlement offer might be relevant. For example, I need only point to this court's prior order in a case called In Re Crag, the Hennepin County case we've been talking about, where the plaintiff, Cook, came to the Hennepin court and said, we want to examine the attorneys at Eklund and Blando about the justification for their initial settlement demand in this case. It was a seven-figure demand. I said, no, please, that's privileged. The judge in Hennepin County said, motion granted, you have to show up and answer questions about it. I threw a Hail Mary, came to this court and said, this is wrong. Please grant me a writ of prohibition. This court did grant that extraordinary writ. And in the order, in this court's published order that grants my writ of prohibition, it mentioned the dollar amount of our initial settlement demand no less than seven times. Okay? Seven times was a seven-figure initial settlement demand mentioned. So is it really, is the standard in Minnesota, everyone knows you never, ever, ever mention a settlement figure in a public filing? I think not. And I would, I'm sure Your Honors have had a chance to review that prior decision, but I think that decision actually weaves in a lot of relevance to what's before you today. In terms of the disqualification, I think it's fairly well briefed. I think that the plaintiff, or Mr. Cook, defendant in this case, plaintiff in the other case, might want to use that. In the Hennepin case, there was really no reason to disqualify the entire firm or to find that they violated the ethical rules. The question was, well, did this initial complaint in Dakota County, was it handed to the Star Tribune? Yes, it was. Okay, there's no real dispute. It was kind of silly to say that if you need a witness, if Ms. St. Amant has to take the stand, there are plenty of other lawyers at Eklund and Blando, including Mr. Reuter, who could have attended trial, and the client would not have been deprived of her own choice of counsel. So I think that the disqualification ruling was unnecessary, but again, I think it's pretty well briefed, and I'll be quiet now unless you have more questions.
I just have one question. All right, so I see that the special master ordered defendant's motion, or not, defendant's motion for sanctions is granted. The statements made by plaintiff's lawyers in the filing of July 18, 2023 are not protected by the litigation privilege. So there's your conclusion from the special master. But I'm looking at the district court's findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and I see there's reference to the fact that Mr. Cook was arguing that there was no litigation privilege, but I don't see that the district court specifically said yes.
You're right, I agree.
The district court just said, I'm affirming yet another sound legal decision made by the special master.
Yes, indeed.
But am I missing it? Maybe the other side can point it out to me. I see no analysis, discussion, or even mention of litigation privilege other than saying defendants are saying it doesn't apply here.
You are 100% right, but just I have this other case where the other side is saying res judicata, and I have a judge saying I'm
going to
defer.
I'm just looking at this saying, the district court, as best I can tell, and the other side can address this, affirmed or adopted the conclusion that litigation privilege doesn't apply without any analysis or without even expressly saying, yes, I'm adopting that conclusion, except the wholesale adoption of everything the special master said.
Right. I mean, there is no law to justify that, in my view, so that's...
So is that something we should remand for, or are you just saying we should on our own decide that it applies and reverse?
This is de novo review. There's no law supporting that conclusion. I think it would be an easy thing to just reverse that one.
But is that relevant in this case? I mean, I understand. It's relevant in the other defamation case. How is it relevant in this case where your clients were not parties to this case? They're here and were granted standing on appeal because they're saying their reputation's been harmed. They've been ordered to pay $20,000. How does the issue of litigation privilege have any relevance in the case that's before us other than it impacts what someone might do in another case?
Well, I think that, too, is the argument for why there's no litigation privilege is because you people were so bad, so even worse than the ethic. This was so beyond the pale that this, as a sanction, this needs to be stripped from you. I think that was the special master's reasoning. You were so bad that has to be stripped.
And so we're assuming that Judge Cook adopted that reasoning wholesale since her order doesn't address the issue.
Well, she either didn't affirm it or she did affirm it without addressing it. It's kind of a head-scratcher. Your Honors could choose.
If it applies, presumably, not only should they not have been disqualified, there should have been no sanctions, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So it does have some relevance to this case as opposed to the res judicata in the Hennepin County case.
Oh, for sure. I think it's tied up in the whole sanctions order from which we appealed.
But that's why I asked you initially, were you at the sanctions hearing saying you can't sanction us because we have litigation privilege?
Well, they argued, I wasn't there at all, but Eklund and Blando argued that litigation privilege should apply.
Okay.
Yes.
So you did raise it.
Yes, yes. And I've cited, the other side said in their brief we didn't raise it. In my reply brief, I have a bunch of cites to the record on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Morrison. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Janelle Dresden and Catherine Campbell from Anthony Osland on behalf of respondent Delvin Cook. We are here.
We can assume Ms. Campbell did all the work.
Yes.
Thank you.
Great brief writer. We are here today because the district court and Judge Cork and Special Master Judge Blazer found intentional misconduct by the appellants. And the court found that both court orders and professional standards in terms of filing this memorandum publicly were violated, considering all the facts and circumstances. The standard of review for this court, as the court is aware, is abuse of discretion and on both issues, and the district court did not abuse its discretion in either ordering sanctions against the appellants or in disqualifying the appellants. Therefore, the district court should be affirmed. I want to immediately address some questions that were raised during the appellant's argument, specifically with respect to the questions raised by Judge Conley and Judge Larkin relating to the protective order. And the protective order is part of the record. It's at docket 84. Very clearly at paragraph 1, the protective order states that the order, and this is quote, "This order governs the treatment of all documents and other products of informal or formal exchange between the parties, as well as all information derived or extracted therefrom." And that paragraph concludes by stating that it applies to other disclosed information, and that's defined as material produced by any party or non-party in the party's dispute. It's not related under that.
But doesn't say pleadings.
It says all materials, any exchanges between, which would be the confidential settlement communications exchange between the parties, which then were in the memorandum, which was then filed publicly, even though those confidential exchanges were designated as confidential. There is no question that under the terms of this protective order, the process that should have been followed is once those communications were marked as confidential, there is a paragraph that requires challenge. If a party disagrees with a confidential designation under paragraph 15 of the protective order, the designation of any material as confidential is subject to challenge by any party. The parties must first meet and confer in good faith to resolve the objection formally, and if they can't resolve it, a motion needs to be filed. The protective order says, quote, "Until a court rules on the challenge, all parties must continue to treat the materials as confidential under the terms of this order." That's not what happened here. What the appellants did instead is they referred to materials and information that was marked confidential, designated as confidential by the respondent in a public filing filed at 11:08 p.m. at night, knowing and intending, as both the district court and Special Master Blazer found, that it be scrutinized by the media. They had done that in the past before this case even commenced. And instead of following the terms of the order, they took matters in their own hands. And they filed it publicly. And when the matter was brought to their attention the next morning, as soon as Mr. Cook's counsel discovered this occurred, contact was immediately made to try to address the situation. And the response that was received by the appellant's counsel, Ms. St. Amant, was, "We intended to do that." So Mr. Cook had to address it with the court, and the court immediately, upon it getting before her, Judge Cork, said, "We are going to treat this information as confidential." And she ultimately determined that the information should be treated as confidential. She put it under seal, and she's kept it under seal. But the problem is, in the meantime, the same court reporter that the appellants contacted before any cases were ever commenced in this matter, and the same news media outlets that picked up the story originally, reported on this matter and had headlines that were very damaging to Mr. Cook. So the motion in limine was granted. The court kept the information as confidential. And
did the memorandum of law specifically reference items in the two letters that were clearly designated confidential?
Yes, absolutely. And mischaracterized them, including stating that the plain language says X, Y, and Z.
Did it quote from the letters? Like did the memorandum say, letter A says this, which is obvious.
It definitely summarized. I can't tell you if there's quotes around it without pulling up the memorandum to see if there's quotes, but it referred to the amount of the settlement, it referred to conditions of the settlement, and then it falsely, according to the district court, mischaracterized those statements. So
Judge Blaser, Special Master Blaser, says, you failed to follow the protective order. Judge Cork says, although the court's not inclined to find the documents are classified as confidential, she didn't say there wasn't a violation of the protective order. In fact, she refers back to this language that there is a procedure under which if something is designated confidential and you disagree with it, you can challenge it. Okay, why didn't they challenge the designation of the information being confidential when the information was exchanged in the first place? Because counsel knows, parties know that settlement communications are typically deemed confidential. And so they agreed with it. And that also can be a basis under the protective order. If the parties agree something should be confidential, that it be treated as confidential.
Can you tell me where in the special master's memorandum he explains why there's no litigation privilege?
I don't believe that there is a detailed analysis by Special Master Blaser.
Is there any analysis?
Well, he does give reasons that would be relevant to why the litigation privilege should not apply, Your Honor.
And where are those?
So, for example, to be clear, the litigation privilege is not absolute. The court, before the litigation privilege can be invoked,
Are you reading from his memo, or are you just...
No, I want to lay out the law, and then I can give you the explanation for the reasons. So the litigation privilege, the court must determine that protection is necessary to the administration of justice, and the administration of justice requires complete immunity and evaluate competing interests. And Judge Blaser and Judge Cork both evaluate the competing interests that were at issue here with the filing of this memorandum. That is the fact that it's a confidential settlement communication and the policy reasons behind protecting confidential settlement communications, as well as against the interests of the privilege itself. So Judge Blaser at page 4 does indicate that plaintiff had ignored the procedure, intentionally filed the information as public with, I'm quoting, with full knowledge that the documents contained confidential information protected by the protective order. That definitely is an issue that needs to be balanced against whether the litigation privilege should apply. The court.
So are you saying we should focus on there was no legitimate reason to make the filing public other than to damage defendant? Would
yes.
that be the strongest reference to as to why the litigation privilege doesn't apply?
Well, that's one of the reasons, that's one of the competing interests that the court needed to evaluate or special master needed to evaluate in determining whether applying the privilege is consistent with the necessary administration of justice. There's a number of other factors, too, that Judge Cork, this is in terms of...
Am I wrong to have a concern that you're asking us for an advisory opinion on whether or not the litigation privilege applies? I mean, we have no indication that the master or the district court judge applied the standard and the case law that you've just described in first making the blanket statement, litigation privilege doesn't apply, and second, saying I adopt the special master's order in full.
I think, Your Honor, for purposes of this appeal, this court does not need to decide whether the litigation privilege applies at all.
And why is that?
Because the litigation privilege is supposed to be an affirmative defense to claims being brought. And we don't have that before this court today. We have the question of whether the sanctions order and the disqualification were an abuse of discretion, neither of which the litigation privilege needs to be decided for because they're not claims. Whether the litigation privilege is a proper affirmative defense will be decided in the context of the Hennepin County case. Judge Klein has already ruled multiple times it doesn't apply. That is the other appeal that is pending that the appellants have filed, and we believe that's the proper place for where that decision should be made. In addition, I do want to address your questions about whether this litigation privilege was addressed by Judge Cork. Part of the reasoning you're not seeing an analysis is the appellants in this case, when they filed their memorandum
filed a 50-plus page memorandum in excess of the 35-page limit. And Judge Cork said she was not going to consider anything beyond the 35 pages. It was beyond those 35 pages wherein the appellants argued that the litigation privilege should apply. And because of that, Judge Cork didn't consider it. Now, to appellant's point, it was a matter that was raised at oral argument on the motion, but she didn't consider it, and I think for the same reasons I believe this court doesn't need to decide that issue today in the context of this appeal. She didn't provide an analysis of it.
So given what you're saying, is it fair to view the district court's affirmation of the special magistrate's statement that the litigation privilege doesn't apply, that ruling has to be limited to its context? In other words, what Judge Blaser appears to have done was to say, well, as a sanction for what you're doing, I'm saying the litigation privilege doesn't apply here. And consistent with what you've said, it's an affirmative defense. So to the extent it was raised in the case that is before this court, it was raised as a defense to a request for sanction.
Yes.
And so they said, well, one of the sanctions is I'm not allowing you to use litigation privilege to avoid sanctions here.
Correct.
Bigger separate issue is whether or not there's a litigation privilege available in the separate Hennepin County defamation action, and on that issue, the district court has already ruled.
Yes.
So is it wrong to think that these things can be, or that the affirmance of the litigation privilege issue is limited to its context, and that is simply, was there a litigation privilege that provided a justifiable defense to the sanctions request?
Yes. If I'm following your question, I think the answer is to that is yes. So
in other words,
they can be separated.
Just because Judge Blaser said, as a sanction, you can't, just because Judge Blaser said, you can't use the litigation privilege to avoid their request for sanction here, does not mean that for all purposes, in another case with defamation claims, which weren't before the district court in the case that's before us, the litigation privilege could not be raised and determined separately in that case.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, I think what I would like to highlight on that is Judge Klein has already separately exercised his own independent judgment on this. And, in fact, well before the sanctions order in the Dakota County case, Judge Klein ruled on in response to both a motion to dismiss that action and summary judgment that the litigation privilege doesn't apply, and he did his own independent analysis. He has now a third time, just in early September, in ruling on another dispositive motion that the appellants have brought in the Hennepin County case, ruled yet again that the litigation privilege doesn't apply. That order is what is subject to the other appeal that'll be pending, and in that context, the panel that is assigned to that case can decide whether Judge Klein, in exercising his independent determination as to whether the litigation privilege should apply, should be affirmed or not.
So but you don't think we should touch this issue?
I don't think you should touch this issue. I think it would be premature and prejudicial without having the full record of what Judge Klein ruled and having.
So the expedited appeal we've heard about from opposing counsel, the issue in that appeal is specifically whether or not Judge Klein erred in determining that there wasn't a litigation privilege.
That is one of the issues, yes. And I do want to briefly address the position that Rule 11 and the litigation privilege are mutually exclusive. They're not. A filing of a pleading for an improper purpose does not equate to the privilege applying. Because, as I've already stated, the privilege is not as broad. You can have multiple consequences for your actions. You can be sanctioned for violating the rules that lawyers are expected to be bound by and follow in the state of Minnesota. And simultaneously, you can also be found liable if your actions cause damages as a matter of civil practice. And I see my time is out.
You know, if you want, I did give Mr. Morris some extra time, so.
I just want to say there is certainly a basis, just like there you can be liable for the exact same actions criminally and civilly. The same is true for lawyers. You can be
You can be held sanctioned for violating court rules like Rule 11 and under the court's inherent power when you appear before them, and you can also have the civil consequences. With respect to the disqualification, I will rest on our briefing. There wasn't many questions on that. Unless the court has any questions, I'll conclude and ask that the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Dressen.
Thank you.
Mr. Morris, you'll have the last words.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple comments on that. Ms. Dressen mentioned a few times abuse of discretion standard. That would typically apply to a sanctions ruling. However, underlying legal conclusions that are faulty would be reviewed as a matter of law de novo. So there is kind of embedded a de novo review.
Did the pleading, Ms. Dressen stated that the pleading sort of summarized or referenced things that were in the letters. I mean, is that a fair, and the letters were clearly protected by the protective order. Is that a fair statement?
Well, first of all, the letters, I disagree that the letters were clearly protected.
Okay, well, let's say for the sake of argument, I think they are. Would it be fair to say that the pleadings kind of, I fail to understand how if a protective order, protects the substance of two letters, that you can then summarize them in a pleading and somehow say the litigation privilege applies. So I guess my first question is, if we think the letters are protected, did the pleadings kind of give the substance or some of the substance of in those letters? And the answer is?
There was some of the substance of the letters described in the memorandum of law.
I mean, that does seem to be like you're trying to get around, which goes to, the arguments about the spirit of the protective order versus the letter. I mean, why on earth would we say, well, by God, all this stuff in these two letters are protected, but if you want to summarize them in some pleading or answer or counterclaim or responsive memorandum of law, have at it. That strikes me as being odd. Now, why am I wrong?
Okay, well, first reason, in this appeal, before I filed my opening brief, I filed a motion in this special term motion. Let me file my brief confidentially because, I don't want to get in trouble, right?
You were worried.
Right. Why wouldn't I be?
That kind of makes the point. If you were worried, why weren't your clients worried?
No,
If, as Ms. Dressen points out, there was this procedure to talk about, if you disagree, do this and that and the other thing. Which goes to my original question is, why didn't somebody try to get preclearance?
To finish my thought, this court denied my motion to file my brief as confidential and told me, if you got protected stuff, just summarize it. Okay? That's what this court told me to do. That's what I did in my brief. Okay? In terms of the protective...
The underlying letters, there's an agreement that says if you exchange something, you can designate it as protected under the order. Were these letters designated by Mr. Cook's counsel as this falls under the terms of the protective order?
No. I mean, we have a fundamental disagreement on that. But I agree with Judge Cork when she said in her order that we're appealing from, no, this information was not governed by the protective order. And then in the next, breath, she said, but I'm going to affirm the sanction, not because it violated the protective order, but because everybody knows that if you got some kind of settlement communication going on, you don't talk about that in public. I had that page pulled up, but I'm sure it's quoted in our brief. Second point.
So how does Judge Cork abuse her discretion, particularly looking at the inherent authority of the court to impose sanctions when both Judge Cork and Special Master Blazer indicated that there was behavior that was done in bad faith? It seems to me, how is that an abuse of discretion if the record supports that, or if we see that the record supports that?
Well, the bad faith crystallizes down to publicly filing a memorandum of law opposing a motion in limine. And so I say that that cannot be sanctionable unless you identify to me a clear violation of a protective order or court rule, not a violation of, well, everyone knows, that's, it's distilled in her order. Everyone knows.
Counsel, isn't it the behavior? That being that it seems to me that Judge Cork and Special Master Blazer are saying that you were intentionally attempting to try this in the media and in engaging in behaviors that not only violated the letter of the law, but quite frankly, the spirit of the law. So if we find that that behavior is supported by the record, and I'm not saying it is or is not, if we find that the behavior that you violate the spirit of the law is supported by the record, how is that an abuse of discretion?
Well, for sure, that kind of behavior is not a reason to do away with litigation privilege. The law is very clear. Even if you're acting with malice or know that it's false, that doesn't do away with the litigation privilege. And I think that, you know, counsel is backtracking on that issue a little bit, reading the panel. And the brief said, please affirm on litigation privilege. Now it's, you know, don't touch it, please. Let the other court do it. So, you know, sanctions, I suppose you could fish through the record and find something else other than the public filing. But as I read the orders, it's looking at a very narrow issue. That's how we briefed it. And did the public filing, was that done in something, were they required to do it as confidential?
But would you agree that both Special Master Blazer and Judge Cork did raise the fact that the court has in its inherent authority to impose sanctions?
The Rule 11 inherent authority, the grab bag of sanctions. Last thing I just wanted to correct, just make sure this is clear. Judge Klein in Hennepin County, when he ruled on over the years on litigation privilege, that didn't have to do with this memorandum that we're talking about today. That had to do with the initial complaint filed in November 2021. So that's not that part is not before you at all. But the litigation privilege that the Dakota County Special Master proclaimed does not apply to this memorandum, that is now the issue in the Hennepin case. And the court has been deferring to Dakota County. There's nothing more in the record in Hennepin than there would be in this court to decide whether litigation privilege applies to that letter. So I just wanted to make sure that's clear. My time is up again. You've been very generous.
I would like you to explain to the panel why the two letters do not fall within the protections of the protective order. Is it because they weren't labeled?
They weren't labeled on every page as you would be required. And simply
labeled on the first page?
Well, not labeled in the normal way you would designate production as confidential. It was labeled in the way almost any settlement letter is ever labeled.
Well, how was confidential it labeled? Rule. What did it say?
I think it said confidential settlement communication.
So it said confidential.
It said that on the first page of the letter. Yes, and.
But there are two letters.
There's two letters.
So did it say that on the first page of each letter?
I believe so.
And your clients didn't look at that and say, "Oh, we've got a protected order that governs the treatment of all documents and other products of informal or formal exchange between the parties, etc., and provides that for designation of materials as confidential, and provides that if anybody does not agree that a document designated as confidential should be, there's an obligation to meet and confer, and if that is not fruitful, to then bring the matter to the court's attention." Why didn't your client do any of that?
They did not think that these letters were a document production that would be covered by a protective order.
Okay, but the protective order governs the treatment of all documents and other products of informal or formal exchange between the parties. So why isn't a letter that's labeled as confidential on the first page within the scope of the protective order?
It's not the protective orders are aimed at discovery. This was not an item of discovery.
I'm not asking what protective orders in general are aimed at. I'm asking about the plain language of the scope of this order, paragraph one.
They, It did not. It was not designated in the way you would strictly that the protective order would have required. We agree with Judge Cork that the protective order didn't apply.
Again, okay, fair enough. You know, it didn't have it on every page, but, you know, this obviously was very contentious litigation, and the protective order was entered into for a reason, and it had a formula for when in doubt, here's what you do. So again, going to my original question, you know, if there was any question as to whether it was covered, wouldn't the better practice have been to invoke the mechanism prior to, you know, blasting away at, you know, whatever time of night it was?
Well, you know, these...
And I mean, it seems to me that, following up on Judge Harris's excellent question, that's what really got the special master revved up, whether or not he did or did not specifically mention litigation privilege, and which Judge Cork relied on, even if she did not specifically mention the words litigation privilege in her decision. I mean, it seems to me that's what they were really upset about. Now, why isn't that... Why shouldn't they have been upset about that? And the answer is...
Well, the answer is you can be upset at the contentious nature of the litigation, right? All judges would get upset about that. But there should not be a sanction. If you sanction somebody, it should be, in my mind, for a clear violation of an order or a clear violation of a rule.
And you don't think there was a clear violation?
I do not. I do not.
Okay. All right.
Nor did Judge Cork.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Morris. Thank you very much, Mr. Dressen. We will issue our decision within 90 days. You're welcome.